is that one? Or is that one?
We actually do this, I think.
Uh-huh. You might be thumb first. There's one. Not that. So how do you three? Not like that. How do you four? So you do four like that. So you do one, two, three, four, five.
And we don't do that so often, so. Okay. But good to know.
Yep. Okay, so having discussed the way we count with our fingers, because I'm a New Zealander, and in New Zealand, we start with one, two, three, four, five, and my daughter counted one, two, three, and I went, that's weird, but apparently that's what Norwegians do.
Like,
that's what we were just discussing. Where do you go three? How do you do four? Aha! The thumb retracts and you pop two fingers up. So, yeah, it's very strange. But anyway, so this talk is games and security. So I'll hand over to Joachim and Daniel.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. So we are probably the only group that doesn't have a PC, because for some reason we had to use this PC with PowerPoint last time we used it with Tomerese. So we had to go through the pain of downloading Office on a virtual machine legally. And here we are. So my name is Daniel. This guy is Joachim, and we are doing a bachelor in game security. And that also includes game engines as well. So our supervisor is Marius, and Simon, partly. Even though I haven't spoken to you. Yeah. Our employer is Sitong Yeso, which some other groups I mentioned before. They have created the game engine Nox, and we were initially one group working with three other students, but like they had the focus to create or expand the engine with new capabilities, and our job was to look at the security part of Nox and their implementation and make sure that they did it securely. But at that time, Nox was very like single player oriented, so we couldn't really do much with security besides from finding a local stuff. So we decided with our supervisor that it would be a better idea to just split the groups and focus on game security overall, and what's included if we found something there. But they are still our employer, and we hope that they can get something out of our thesis. So let's see. We have three main objectives. They are very simple. We have to do a vulnerability assessment and threat assessment to see what are the most common vulnerabilities and threats in the game, because that's kind of what we have to do in order to find what's the biggest issue with the game engines and games. So after that, we do a further analysis of the implementation-related vulnerabilities that we find as a result of the vulnerability assessment, and that will be code-oriented. And we have another. That was one of our objectives, to see other security-related stuff in games that are interesting, such as you know, developer not choosing to encrypt or choosing to place data in some spots that maybe shouldn't, or that are not code-related but are design-oriented. to see what, the, I mean, do the analysis, we have to, like I said, we have to do a threat assessment. And there are ways of doing this. I mean, we could use white box testing to use static code analysis to scan the source code for vulnerabilities and do it that way on other games and other engines as well, not just Nox, and see what the results is and maybe go after that. The problem is with that is that you know, these tools, they often give some false positives, and they are, according to the tools, vulnerabilities, but they may not be actual vulnerabilities that can be exploited. So we get also a kind of false picture of the, in some way. So and that does only work for games and engines where you have the source code. And since we don't have the source code for every game out there, we can't do it. So we had to see from other perspective, from a attacker's perspective. And what we did was identifying all the possible documented exploits we could find on the internet, basically. And we would start mapping them all together and create a assessment out of that. So that was actually a huge hit. Initially, we didn't actually think that that would be a big part of the thesis, but that turned out to be a big part because we had to go over 240 different documented exploits, and we had to classify each of them individually. So we had to study the code and find out what was the vulnerability causing that exploit to happen, in a way, because the attacker did not always describe what caused it to be a possibility to exploit. The attacker, in some instances, just said, well, we do this, we do that, and that happens, but it doesn't really say what the problem was. So we had to really study the code, and we did it carefully, and that took some time. So let me see here.
I know someone downloaded something on the machine and it must have stolen me.
Okay. So this is we have found. There are many of them. Well, it does look better in Chrome, but anyway. So we have the different vulnerabilities that are documented in some way. We have see, this thing should actually be in a separate column named threat, but it's now under here. So and the threat is basically what the attacker could get out of the exploit in the end of the day. It may be many other possible threats, but that was basically what the attacker could do in that case. This is the platform, the type. So we have game, and we have engines, and we have other for some other specific stuff. And the vulnerability. The vulnerability is again, this is something we have classified, but this is done according to common weaknesses enumeration. That is a kind of a database, if you will, of known vulnerabilities. So we use that as a pointer, and to get the most accurate results, we have to do that. We have to classify everything. And some in some cases, we have multiple vulnerabilities, as you see. Well, if I can find like this one. This one has a stack-based overflow and a controlled memory allocation problem. And actually, one more that doesn't check for exceptional conditions. That is, we see it pretty common. Some of the things here are so easy to actually do that it's so surprising. That you could modify just one packet and send it to the game server, and it will crash because it doesn't have any exception for that packet length being smaller or bigger than it should expect to have. So it's small stuff like that that makes the big thing happen. You can crash an entire server. You can, it's denial of service for many users. You can crash clients individually. There are many ways to get into a game. And game security is not something that have been addressed much before. So this is something we have done, this kind of new thing that was suggested by Simon. But this shows only one side of the whole security thing in a game, because we have the design vulnerabilities as well, and that's a huge part. For example, wall hacking and speed hacking and stuff like that are not directly caught by code. Yet the game state is always in memory, and if you can read that memory, you can manipulate that memory and you can cheat. But it's not caused by code directly. So our thesis is mostly directed for code stuff. exploit and not vulnerabilities that are found in a game. If that makes sense. This is only exploited data. So, and as we see, on the top we have something called uncontrolled format string. This is a big problem because, well, once you do that, you can do a backup overflow and possibly do some remote code execution. And it does happen quite a lot in the X for some reason.
Future work is like do the stuff that we couldn't do, do all the non-code stuff, but the more interesting stuff probably, because well, it depends. But you get the injects, you can inject the executable, you can do networking stuff, and a lot more that we haven't looked into, and it's very interesting. It's a field that hasn't been looked at too much, so it has a lot of potential. And we are also happy to have learned something about games, because when we started this project we didn't know anything about games.
we have learned something about it, and especially for the big stuff. Yeah, it's a good thing. So, and this is only one simple way of doing it. This is only one way. There are hundreds, 200 different ways of coming into a game. So this is one, just one example. But any questions here?
Thank you.
Different exploits that have been documented in some way.
Or any possible games.
For games and engines and third parties as well. So anything that leads to a game or a player playing the game, that's what they have looked at.
Yeah. Several games and several engines.
What's your conclusion for this?
That's a good question. The conclusion is that if we look at this, it's not too different from a regular application. But that's one conclusion. The other conclusion is, I mean, game engines, more specifically, can be used in other fields apart from just games. FBI have bought license for Unreal Engine, for example, and is used for military training. And that is a potential problem, and they use it in airlines for flight simulator stuff everywhere, and now virtual reality as well can be used in many other fields than just gaming. So it is a huge potential doorway into system. So. And
so
once you exploit one game engine, you can exploit many games. That is important.
So are you planning on being Black Hat or White Hat? your pause in your answer suggests that you might be Black Hat. Okay, other questions?
The problem is with that is that it can be done, but most of this stuff is old stuff as well. Not that many, to be honest.
Analysis.
but let me say one thing. There is a organization, a small group of people. They go under the name of Revolver, and they are the biggest in game security. And they have a lot of good stuff with proof of concepts for just about everything.
No, I know.
So
I'm just trying to figure out your concept.
Okay. Yeah.
So you search the internet, you look for whatever it is related to the end, and then you try to categorize it from.
We want the reader, you know, we are doing this not only for Linux, but for everyone else that are interested in game security. So for any developer that are, especially new developers that are curious about security in games, hopefully they can find our thesis as some value, as we do actually assess this situation and see, get an idea. And we do cover the most critical vulnerabilities here in more detail. We describe how they work and what you can do to counter this one.
This description is not quite as easy.
That was our initial plan, right? So, because the other group, they did some practical stuff, okay, that we had no relation to at all. So we found it very hard to actually do anything.
Yeah, but just for that, what would you propose now is if you want to work with them and you want to access their product. Maybe after, or even before, first of all. So why didn't you take the decision that you tried to assess the working process?
That was because Nox, the other guys were coding this for Nox, the engine that those guys created. And that engine is very good, but it's not very accessible from the outside of play oriented, and we wanted something that was more.
Well, you have the abilities that you have the source code.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know. So,
you can also analyze, you can assist,
yeah.
You can assist.
Light box, if you have the code.
Yeah, but of course, if you didn't, you also lack it, so that's what my first question. If you didn't inject, you didn't create a stack itself.
Well, we all agreed on that stuff, so with the supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not entirely our decision. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're done, and we'll change it. Okay. So thank you. Pretty impressively long list.
Yeah. Thank you. That was all we have.
Still a lot of
yeah.
Good. next presentation is a group of three, and looking at creating a new game, looking at various aspects of a platformer and the ways in which you can make a game in that area. So, I'll hand over to Camilla Ingeborg and
some tips and ideas in the start phase.
again. Thank you very much. Guys, your cans, when you grab the cans, they're trying to send extra cans that you might grab. Yeah,
that's
Testing, yeah. Like this.
Take with my phone then.
Hello?
Oh, the sound.
Yeah, it's actually the proper solution. Okay. What's wrong?
Well, it's at different resolution from the laptop monitor,
yep.
And what it outputted. And
yeah.
When I connected it, it doesn't
that?
Report that it supports higher resolution than.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
No, not
okay.
Anymore.
Can we go with that?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's only that my the laptop resolution is too low.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the next meditation is on Minecraft maps.
This is looking at using real world data in Minecraft. So,
yeah. Our project is, as mentioned, real maps for Minecraft, and the project is about creating Minecraft maps automatically from real-world geographic data. The team consists of myself, Sindre Helleborg, and Telle Fomdahl, and we're at our third year of our game programming bachelor's. And we both have quite an extensive experience with Minecraft, so...
yeah.
Yeah, Real Maps for Minecraft is the brainchild of Ben Sawyer, who is our external of Digital Mill. He's the co-founder of the Serious Games Initiative and the co-founder of the Games for Health. And Simon McCollum is our supervisor. I've probably heard of him.
Sitting right there. Yeah, most of our goals are based on Ben Sawyer's original ideas. We had some thoughts about this as well, but it mostly boils down to playability, aesthetics, that's compatible with vanilla, and don't fuck up like the rest of them did. So, in more detail, what I mean in playability, that you can actually play Minecraft normally, as it would be any other map in Minecraft. Like, you can find coal underground, there's even forests, and there's not unusable hills, like impassable walls everywhere. That's gonna be useless. Next point, aesthetics, or the style of Minecraft, is more like, instead of having custom crafted foliage, like the trees with weird shapes, if you're playing Minecraft, like the thing doesn't look unusual, so handcrafted forests will look quite odd if you played in Minecraft with that, and all the layouts of any other things like cave systems or ravines or the ore distributions underground, because that those are placed in specific ways, it would look stupid if it was any different. What I mean in vanilla compatibility, our solution uses mods for creating it, but the result can be used with Minecraft itself without any mods. And that's what vanilla means, no mods included. And it also leads to being usable by everybody, especially people without experience with modding Minecraft. That's going to be quite challenging if you don't know what you're doing at all. So we aimed for it being drag and drop more or less, so you can just get a map and play it. No more setup required, especially good for servers. And the next last point is, like, we have looked at some other solutions, and most of them are more science-based and creating flat worlds with these fine lines drawn on them for roads or like handcrafted forests or handcrafted maps, but they completely ignore the underground section of Minecraft, which is like half the game, where you find most of the ores and you get material you need to build or survive, if you're playing survival, that is. If you're playing creative, then you don't actually need it, but then it's not more playable, it's more just creative sandbox, so it's outside the scope of what we looked at.
Our system is designed as a web service with three basic components: a generator taking the raw geographic data and transforming it into a format that can be directly transformed into the final Minecraft map by our mod. The modification that does this, and a website hosting these two applications and acting as the front end. We designed this system to be as modular as possible, so that the only connection with the generator codebase and the mod codebase is the fact that they used the same format. The output format of the generator is the input format of the mod we have created. We had several reasons for this design choice. The most important one is the problems inherent in integrating a batch processing system, that is our generator, into a inherently live interactive system that the Minecraft is. In addition, we thought we could potentially use this system for other games if we wanted, so it would be nice to have sort of do the processing just once and then could apply it to several different games if we wanted to. And lastly, it makes licensing issues less complicated. Yeah, the website takes orders from customers wanting a map, and then starts up a generator and uses command line parameters to tell details such as the location of the map and the scale of the map. Yeah, and the generator has two main sources of data: digital elevation models, or DEMs, and data from OpenStreetMaps. DEMs are geographic data, basically height maps. The generator takes this data and processes it sequentially through a pipeline of different algorithms. First, it fills in missing data using sort of an algorithm for generating plausible terrain based on what's already there. And then it goes through a noise removing algorithm. Finally, we use a model for an algorithm for scaling the map into a size that's representable in Minecraft, because sort of the real world varies a lot more than 256 meters, which is sort of the maximum maximum difference in elevation possible in Minecraft. Interestingly, one of the options we had for this was based on an algorithm for creating high dynamic range images. The color space and the height in Minecraft have the same limitation of 8 bits, so it's a similar thing. OpenStreetMaps is stored in an XML format, so the generator takes this data and parses it and gets sort of polygons, regular polygons that it parses into a bitmap format, so that this can later be used by the map. It details things such as roads, forests, and lakes, which would be very difficult to get from the DEM, since all it gives you is the height map. So the final output of the generator is actually PNG images, where because that's sort of really easy to it's supported in a lot of systems, and it actually fits our needs, because, as I said, we only need 8 bits of height information. So the red channel is the height of the terrain, and the blue channel is the height of the water. The green channel is the code for the specific biome, and the alpha channel is a series of bit flags. Well, not all of them are used. Yeah. For the final stage of actually converting that data into a Minecraft map, we use a modded Minecraft version. And the reason we did this instead of creating an external application that generates Minecraft maps was to... the reason we didn't do that was because we had to have sort of consistency between the original Minecraft and our own, so that we don't have to do the work of replicating Minecraft's entire generation systems. What we do is hijack Minecraft's map generation systems by taking over higher level decisions, such as the height of the terrain and the biome placement, but let Minecraft handle the lower level things, such as the placement of specific plants and specific ores. So the entire underground is left to Minecraft.
Yeah, now for the fun part, just actually demonstrate here, but because of the screen resolution, something might explode. So, see what happens. As the site is running in a VMware, because of the setup settings and all that, I have it in there for portability. It's actually supposed to be larger, so when I resume this, everything will be wrong for minutes. So bear with me. Yeah, so I'll start by showing the web page, like how it works, how it looks in the foreground. Not that interesting, actually. And then what it happens in the background, and the results we have that, and the actual map, and some fun with that. Maybe if this works. Yeah. Well, this is quicker than actually booting from zero, so has everything set up except the window positions, because they are now everywhere. So like this should be, yeah, there, and doesn't look too well. Study. Was that covering the screen? And we have last one. Is this one? Yes, it is. Is it? No, it's that one. Oh yeah, because it's decided to be on the part of the skin you can't see. There it is. Yeah, it's, sorry about that. That's good, yeah, work in progress. The site is Django based, so easy to create, made in Python. This is the console output of Celery, the asynchronous task manager that I've set up with Django. So let's just create a job here, call it presentation. And we select the data test, maximum test, because it's short, so we can actually see the results. Receive the task, start generating after 10 seconds. Slight delay. The generator starts up and does its job. It'll take around 30 seconds, I think. Downloads things from OpenStreetMaps. Then use everything. And now Minecraft is launching. Well, it's a modded version of Minecraft with Forge. As I said, we're using a mod. Now it's generated one area, then we'll start generating the entire map. I force it to generate it, and then we'll zip it up, and then the user can use it. It's kind of cut off here, but you see it. Oh yeah, there's no auto refresh. I haven't added that. The like the site itself is just proof of concept that you can actually do it. It's more like a fancy button to launch it with some configuration parameters. There, it's quit and then it's saved. Then we reload here. There's no job because it's done. Maps generated. It's generated number 8 presentation. And can download it if you want to. And you can see there's a map with all the parts that's required. And that's the site itself. I won't need the virtual machine anymore. And from the data structure itself that is generated, like before, between the mod and like the thing the generator spits out, and before it's used in the mod, actually the part that can be used by any other program that can interpret it is this. As I said, just a series of PNG files. Where you can see the red red color is the heights, and the blue, you'll see like purple, is water, and slightly transparent because some control bits are set and some are not. And the rest of the configuration is just JSON files with numbers in them or text. So, not that amazing, but simple and human readable. So, you can debug it with your eyes if you want to. And now we're going to show actual results in Minecraft, given that this doesn't explode either because of the resolution. Or it shouldn't explode. Has no reason, but you never know with technology. There it is. So I'll just launch this one. Also, the mod works on the client as well if you want to create a world. I'm just using the our world type, you can select the data set you want to use and whatnot, but we're not going to do that because we already have one generated. Given that I can select it, there it is. Close this one, don't need launcher. Well, so here in Minecraft, this is some water. Let's find something interesting in Minecraft from these latitude and longitudes. Teleport to it. Oh, it's right here. Can anyone guess where this is? Yes.
2 points.
Now let's check. We got the real location and we open it in Google Maps. Well. Yes. I would have zoomed in here if the scroll bar worked properly. But yeah, that's this tiny Holmen outside of Helgeia. And you see in game. Right here. And then the rest of the island. And supposedly Jøvik, but with nothing. Like
Yeah.
We had the idea of populating roads and whatnot, but that's a feature for later. Also, that's the bridge. It was part of the geographical data we had, so we get the bridge, like, sort of. Yeah, but that's it, and... specifically constructed cars for this area! I could add that, no. But no, those are spawned by Minecraft. Like, these areas are designated to be, like, this is an ocean, said so. This is plains, and over here we have forest. We just say this area is forest, and then Minecraft plops down all the trees, and flowers, and pumpkins. Because pumpkins. And generates the underground area, so. This if I hadn't told you this was Helgeia, or some specific area, it could be just normal Minecraft. Couldn't tell the difference, except for the biome distribution. That would give it away. So it is. And for giving a bit of perspective to just that, as a comparison of Helgeia and in Minecraft. Yes, and that just to show off. That's the demo, actually. I'll just close Minecraft, I don't need that open. And back to the presentation. Yeah.
Yeah. So the conclusions. Did we manage to achieve the goals we set out to do? Well, the aesthetics and the gameplay of Minecraft is certainly preserved here, we think. But obviously, if that was our only concern, we wouldn't have had much to do with this project. So when it comes to the similarity between our Minecraft maps and the real world, we mostly feel that sort of depending on the exact settings we use, that it's as similar to our Minecraft maps is as similar to the real world as Minecraft maps can be, really. But when it comes to actually navigating the terrain, we actually set up some tests, as you heard earlier, with some 10-year-olds and some sort of people of different ages. We were asked to find locations in our Minecraft maps based on locations in Google Maps and vice versa. So they got a node and then they had to find it in Minecraft. Yeah. Most everyone managed to identify obvious landmarks, such as Helgeia, as you saw there, but finding other specific points were met with mixed success. We believe that adding more features such as roads and things like that can significantly improve the performance here. But we also believe that the skills needed to navigate our maps and the skills needed to navigate in the real world overlap, so that sort of training in orienting would improve the performance of trying to navigate in our maps, and that our maps could be used as a fun teaching environment for gaining that skill. The system in its entirety works with one small caveat. We had difficulties to find a server to download the DEM data automatically. We worked around that by having the data on our server already. So the project is not quite ready for full-scale commercialization, but we believe that it doesn't need that much more work. First of all, we need to either find a sort of server for DEM data that has an API you can automate, and not just sort of manual downloading. That would be sort of quite hard work. Or either that, or we need to download and host all the data ourselves, which is, I think, was it 20 terabytes of data?
Well, half terabyte compressed.
Yeah, quite a lot in any case. on our own server. So in addition to that, we believe that it's sort of a matter of adding a few more things, such as roads, signs denoting important landmarks, and things like that. And in addition to sort of a bit more polish of the generation system and perhaps some optimization, just adding more customizations to the website so that people can get exactly the kind of map they want.
And a proper web designer as well. I'm a programmer, not a web designer.
Yeah. Yep. So, questions? Do anyone want to have their ask? Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
And organize it.
Yeah.
And then optimizing it takes place as well, and processing power and whatnot.
The OpenStreetMaps data is downloaded from a sort of OpenStreetMap host, and we get it as XML data, as I said, and that we download every time we generate, but the DEM data is stored as a file on our server, on our...
Okay, and where is it that serves those files? Like some scientific research collection sites that I found some usable data on? If they don't have an API for it, it's kind of hard. Then start scraping the website and spoofing the JSON file.
You can also talk directly to a number of sites.
Yeah.
The
non-documented API. They don't want to have an API.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you're going to sell this, we can't do that. Well, if it doesn't compare, then the other tests wouldn't go anyway. Hmm. So if it compares, then you can use the virtual world and real world to navigate between.
Yeah, we realized that we didn't have sort of that much to compare it with, but it's sort of difficult to. We didn't have the time to take 10-year-olds around the trip of Jøvik to find everything. But yeah, we.
Well, we didn't have roads, so Street View would be kind of useless. But if you added roads, then we could do that.
Yeah.
You mentioned at some point that the data that you downloaded was not completed, that you had to fill in gaps.
Yeah. The filling of data is, if you heard, I assume most of you have heard of the Diamond Square algorithm. Okay, it's about sort of taking a square map, generating the four outer points, and then sort of generating the middle with a slight displacement,
you
and doing that. Doing a sort of having the four outer points, and then generating a middle point based on that with a slight offset, and doing it again on a level down with a new offset on the sort of things in the middle. So you can get generated from the top to the down. This one has a step before where it takes all the points that's already been created and generates it in the opposite direction, going from the last generated points up to the top, so that everyone that has all the points that has descendants are generated. So you go to the top again and then fill out the missing points. And this is done for the entire map. Yeah.
How did the reconstruction compare to the real world?
Sort of, we haven't really. It's not that much things that are missing to really look at it. But so we haven't really done specific tests. But generally, Diamond Square is known as sort of the one that sort of most looks like plausible terrain. Sort of the point here is not to have sort of a simulation of Jøvik that can be used sort of for scientific work. So it sort of has to just look real. So yeah.
Pinpoint accuracy is not the goal. Something worth testing.
Okay.
Well, we need data for those areas. That's the main problem. Well, this is to keep the feature you see around you, but still compress them inside the scale we have to work with.
So
that's the goal, at least.
Yeah, sort of the HDR algorithm takes sort of massive differences in scale. Sort of if you were going to have sort of the a huge map with Mount Everest and sort of down to the sea level, you have sort of thousands of meters in difference. So the point is that really large features are compressed more than smaller features, so that sort of a hill that would be sort of less than a block high is sort of compressed less than sort of the huge hill, so that you see both of them, and that the larger features are larger in the result. So it's sort of the HDR makes sort of a cartoony version of the world, and we sort of also have linear scales when that's sort of for the people who want that. But yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we have done that, but sort of the main point was really to make sure that it works for
vanilla.
Yeah.
Or unmodded Minecraft, so I can just drag and drop the map into whatever instance of Minecraft or Minecraft server you have.
Your process though would work with modded Minecraft if you extended the range.
Yes, yeah. If you added a parameter for height.
Yeah.
Just that actually, or ignore height compression. But then it would just be converting data and filling in the missing blanks. Or like, yeah. So you just remove the HDR or linear compression and just have the exact scale compression, like the plane you're walking in instead of the height.
No.
Well, there shouldn't be any difference because it's just normal terrain.
Men det er interessant. Og jeg har sett på det, jeg vet om 12 chunks, nei, hva det heter igjen. Det er en måte som gjør slik at du får chunks i alle retninger, så det bare XF. Du får chunks i retninger også, så kan det evig i alle retninger. Jeg har sett på å bruke det. Det er bare sånn, den er ikke oppdatert, var det vel. Det er en 7-10. Eller en 8-7 faktisk bruker, for å ha siste featuren på Minecraft.